Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning to our multi-generational service by one of our newest worship associates, Sophie Smith, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, our music director, Hal Walker, and a small group of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Choir. And Eric Van Bars has a special announcement.
Dance.
For multi-generational worship, we always use the same words to light the chalice. So please join me if you know this. We light this chalice
because we're Unitarian Universalists.
This is the church of the open mind.
This is the church of the helping hands.
This is the church of the loving heart.
On the long, hard road in the fight to be free, no woman worked harder than Susan Anthony. She lived in a time when most men said there was nothing important inside a woman's head. So women set out to prove that this was wrong. There was lots of work to do. The journey was quite long. Even lots of women didn't want equality, wanted things to stay the same for eternity. But Susan B. Anthony and many others with her worked without rest, spring, summer, fall, and winter, talking to women, explaining what was fair, teaching them to stand up, urging them to care. Full equality isn't here just yet, but the work that Susan did, we will never forget. Come, let us remember and worship together.
A couple of times each year, we have the great joy of welcoming new members to our congregation. These are people who have decided that this is a place that they can call home, and we're so glad to be widening our welcome this morning. In addition to welcoming the new members, we're also welcoming their families and their children, and our Director of Religious Education has a few words to say about welcoming the children as well amongst us.
Well, although our church's bylaws say that a member must be at least 14 years old, the children of our members belong to us and we to them. We welcome the children of our newest members as full participants in our program of religious education and in any other program of the church. And when they are 14, they will have the opportunity to officially choose to become Unitarian Universalists. And I am so glad that four of the 16 new members who we are recognizing this morning are youth.
And now I'd like to invite forward one of the co-chairs of the membership committee, Marianne Yeagler, who will lead us in our new member in gathering.
May religion be to us life, integrity, service, and joy. We welcome you. We welcome you to this religious community to share in the celebration of life with us, and the comfort of knowing that you're not on this journey alone. Our hope is that you embrace wholeheartedly both the privileges and the responsibilities bestowed by membership in our church. I will now read with gratitude the names of all our new members And when your name is called, you and your family may come forward and join us in the chancel. Please bring your insert from your order of service with you. Deb Biggins, Amber Strock, and Eric Strock. And some of our members will be at the second service or were unable to attend. Camille Pavelchek Fauser. Carol W. Gould. Matthew R. Cox. Jesse Young and Angela Barzizi Young. Daniel John Flippo Sr. Connor May. Maya O'Meara. Sophie Smith. Noah Kearns. Reed Parsons. Shannon Osorio. And Cynthia Borders. Now, if the congregation would join and participate in the new member ceremony that's on your insert. The congregation begins. We, the members of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent, welcome you and gratefully acknowledge your choice to join with us in our continuing religious life.
I have become a member of this church, aware of the privileges and responsibilities of membership, and with a deep feeling of being welcomed.
Ours is a faith which reveres the past, envisions the future, and lives with passion in this moment. Even as we honor those who have brought us to this day, we celebrate your newly founded commitment and eagerly anticipate working with you in our shared ministries.
I bring to this church community my talents and enthusiasm, my shortcomings and my doubts. I am prepared to give and receive as we travel this path together.
We celebrate your decision and acknowledge the mutuality of our commitments. We too are prepared to give and receive as we travel this path together. Welcome to membership with us in the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent.
In addition to the lovely flowers this morning given by Meg Milko and Deb Biggins, we have these flowers with us, given by Lee Brooker in memory of his beloved 12-year-old dog, Tasha, who died this week. And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. Radiant spirit, force of life, pulsing all around us and even in our own hearts. We give thanks this morning for the gifts we have been given, gifts of breath, of life, of the capacity to love, which means also the capacity to lose and to grieve deeply. We lift our thanks this morning for all of the ones that we have loved and who have loved us, and for the spirit of love, which brings brightness and wholeness, compassion, and connection to each and every day. We gather this morning as a community bound in love, and for this we give our thanks. Amen. Thank you.
We're going to be singing our hymn of recognition next, but you may see that we have two hymns listed. Number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song, and number 113, Where Is Our Holy Church? So we thought, since we're discussing voting this morning, that we would take a vote on which hymn we would sing. And also, all of us are quite aware at this time in the election cycle that stump speeches are very important. So I'm wondering if anyone would like to advocate for any one or the other. If someone is really wanting us to sing My Life Flows On in Endless Song, you may speak. If anyone would like to speak Where Is Our Holy Church, you may speak. Would anyone like to speak to the... Hal?
I'd like to speak for number 108, My Life Flows On. If you look at 113, it's five long verses. It's not particularly singable. And 108 has a nice flow, and it's a fun song to sing.
Any other opinions? Oh, if you'll sit down, Georgia, please. Listen and learn. Any other opinions? William? Okay. All right then. Let's do our voting. So we'll be voting for. Are there other opinions? No, seeing none. We're ready to vote. All right. Who would like to sing 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song? Raise your hands. Now, women and girls, you can put your hands down. Your votes won't be counted. Just the men. And then number 13, Where Is Our Holy Church? Well, it looks like it was unanimous for number 108. So if you'll please stand in body or spirit, we shall sing number 8.
In Aurora High School, I am currently taking a course called AP US History. And the book that we have for that class is The American Pageant. Susan B. Anthony is first talked about being one of the first women to pursue a higher education. The text states, prejudices also prevailed that too much learning injured the feminine brain, undermined health, and rendered a young lady unfit for marriage. Teachers of Susan also refused to teach her long division. The second time she comes up to attention is when the Women's Rights Convention at Seneca Falls, New York is brought up. There, feminists declared a declaration of sentiments that stated that both men and women are created equal. After that, women's rights advocates around the nation were called Susie Bees for standing up for their rights as much as Susan did. The next time she's talked about is when the Women's Loyal League gathered 400,000 signatures to petition the Congress over slavery. Once the 14th Amendment was revealed to the public, the women were infuriated that it specified only males to be able to vote. Just after Susan and Frederick Douglass had a falling out after he said that it was the black hour and asked her to stop the campaigning in fear of everything to return to the way it originally was. In 1872, Susan was thrown in jail for trying to cast a ballot in the presidential election. This led to her and longtime friend Elizabeth Cady Stanton to found the National Women's Suffrage Association of 1890. They were intended to create a new generation of women to take control of the suffrage battle. Their successors insisted upon equal rights, and they were going to continue to do it, their traditional duties as homemakers and mothers. And after taking many rotten eggs and critiques from many male spectators, they were finally and increasingly allowed to make more and more local votes. That was followed by being able to hold property after marriage and control what was done on that land. Most laws still excluded black women, but this gave way to many other people, like Ida B. Wells, to create their own campaigns for women's rights for all races.
In a free society such as ours, it's easy to take freedom for granted. And so we thank you for indulging our little remembrance of what it was like, just a teeny little window into what it was like for women and girls not to be able to speak or to vote. Susan B. Anthony worried that future generations would fail to appreciate the intensity and the length of the struggle that she and others fought. In a speech she delivered at the annual convention of the National Women's Suffrage Association on her 74th birthday, she said of the future, "We shall one day be heeded. And when we shall have our amendment to the Constitution of the United States, everybody will think it was always so. Just exactly as many young people now believe that all the privileges, all the freedom, all the enjoyments which woman now possesses always were hers. They have no idea of how every single inch of ground that she stands upon has been gained by the hard work of women of the past." So one of our invitations today is to remember that we have become who we are because of the proud and courageous efforts of those who struggled for equity and justice before us. In lifting up Susan B. Anthony, we remember that she was part of a network, mentored by those who came before her and pathmaker for those who followed when her time was done. She was one of many. We can hear that in the stories that Karen and Sophie told this morning. We can also hear that in her time, like in ours, there were multiple issues of injustice competing for people's attention. Early on in her work as a reformer, Anthony maintained that the abolition of slavery and the vote for black men and all women were bound up together. When Congress voted to pass the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, giving only black men the right to vote, the women's suffrage movement was split in half. Some of the leadership argued that the proponents of women's suffrage needed to support the state's ratification of the 15th Amendment, as it would move all people one step closer to equality. Other women's suffrage leaders, including Anthony, argued that extending the vote to black men before women would make the degradation of women even more complete. Frederick Douglass had become a close family friend of the Anthonys, but with this conflict, they found themselves on opposite sides of the debate. Douglass argued that while the vote for women was important, for black men getting the vote was a matter of life and death. Anthony argued that all fighters of equality needed to stick together and insisted that black men, as well as white women and black women, needed to be awarded their right to vote together. As a result of this conflict, the national women's suffrage movement split into two groups, which, with Anthony and Katie Stanton and others organizing the National Women's Suffrage Association, while other leaders, including Antoinette Brown Blackwell and Lucy Stone, formed the American Women's Suffrage Association. Black women were also divided, with some, including Sojourner Truth, supporting Anthony's position that all men and women should get the vote together, and others, including Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, who supported the 15th Amendment giving black men the right to vote first. I lift up this conflict because I think it has important lessons to teach us today. With the perspective granted us by time, we may feel now that one side or the other of that debate had the better course. But they, like us, had to choose where they would stand in the midst of moral uncertainty. Freedom requires freedom fighters. The struggle for equality and justice requires people who will stake a claim and lead the way to a more inclusive future. We are called to help create the future that we dream. That's what we teach in this faith tradition. And yet this history reminds us that our knowledge is always partial, our perspective always limited. But we must not let our finitude stop us from acting, though we should let it keep us humble and willing to listen to the perspectives of others. Living in the both and of uncertainty and ambiguity is not comfortable. That's why so many people are drawn to listen primarily or even exclusively to voices of those who share their worldview. I don't deny that it's often more comfortable to associate with like-minded people, but it seems to me that part of democracy requires being open to viewpoints and perspectives that we don't necessarily share. Later this month, we'll offer a service exploring what it takes to cultivate that kind of openness in the public sphere. That's one place where we must expect that we will need to cooperate as equals with all people, even those with whom we have significant differences. And so, in celebration of the people who helped usher in greater equality in the public sphere, and appreciation for you for playing our game earlier with our voting exercise, we will vote again, but this time everybody gets to vote. And so our hymns, our choices for our hymns of affirmation are number 103, For All the Saints, or number 114, Forward Through the Ages. Hal, would you play just the first measure of each so people can remember what they sound like?
103 sounds like this.
Forward
Okay, so everybody who would like to sing that song, 114 Forward Through the Ages, please raise your hand. Okay, and everybody who would prefer to sing For All the Saints. Jeez!
Cal. We need cards.
We need cards, right.
Try again.
Okay, we'll sing two verses of each. Please rise in body or in spirit. So the public sphere is one place. The church, the temple, the synagogue, the mosque, that's another place. In the public sphere, we must expect to differ dramatically. We must even expect that there may be times when the values and perspectives of society are in opposition to our own values and perspectives. However, when it comes to our religious traditions, many people feel a strong need for alignment between their own views and the teaching and the preaching of their faith. Most religious traditions take public stances in alignment with their values. In some religions, those stances are determined by the highest leaders who interpret the sacred scriptures and the history of the tradition to determine the stances of the faith. In our religion, the stances that we take are determined by the people. Our association has taken a strong stance in support of marriage equality, for example, because our members have affirmed time and time again that marriage equality is important to us. I would guess that the vast majority of people who cannot tolerate our association's support of marriage equality have drifted away from Unitarian Universalism by now. We're a pluralistic faith, which means that we have lots of room even for minority viewpoints. We don't tell people with minority viewpoints that they're not welcome among us. When we take public stances as a religious institution, we say each person must decide for themselves whether their own hearts are in alignment with that stance, and if they aren't, how much that matters to their continuing affiliation with us. Susan B. Anthony confronted just such a struggle. She was raised a Quaker and felt a great deal of devotion to her religious heritage. She loved her Quaker faith. However, the Quakers of her region were not willing to take a position against slavery. This failure was so significant to Anthony that she and her family felt that they could not remain in the Quaker meeting, and they began attending the Unitarian Church in Rochester instead. In her writings, it's very clear that Anthony felt equality was a God-given right. She needed her church to teach and preach and fight for the fulfillment of God's right, God's gift to all people. She found what she needed at the Unitarian Church, and she wrote fondly in a letter to her church of the Sunday morning uplifts she received there. It's interesting that we have the opportunity to share this story on our own new member Sunday, because Susan B. Anthony did not become a member of the Unitarian Church in Rochester until she had been attending regularly for 40 years. She finally signed the membership book after her church's 50th anniversary, and she remained a member for the remaining 20 years of her life. Susan B. Anthony was well known for her faith and the struggle, and she gave her life for that struggle. Failure is impossible, she said. She also said, work and worship are one with me. And she urged people to pray with their ballots. And so as we look forward to another significant election in our nation's history, it seems advice worth remembering. Pray with your ballots for the future you dream. May it be so, and amen. I send you with these words from Barbara Peskin. Because of those who came before, we are. In spite of their failings, we believe. Because of and in spite of the horizons of their vision, we too dream. Go in peace.